Between January and July of this year, a record 9,933 public employees retired. And they did so by filing paperwork with a state agency, the Department of Employee Trust Funds. Those are big changes, big numbers. So I've asked the Secretary of ETF, Dave Stella, to come in and talk about that. Dave, thanks very much for coming in.
Thank you for letting
me
be
here.
Where
do you ever find the time to come in and talk to Wisconsin I when you're looking at a record number, processing a record number of retirees?
Well, we got great staff, and part of my job is to get the message out. So I'm here.
Well, thank you very much. 9,933 is a record, but these are just the ones that retired.
Correct.
How many actually asked for the numbers?
About double that number, about 18,000 asked for estimates. So roughly about 50% of those that asked for retirement estimates actually did retire.
Well, once you let's talk about the process a little bit. Mm-hmm. If a public employee, now first of all, the WRS covers, let's explain what it doesn't cover.
Okay. The
thank you.
The public employees in Wisconsin are covered by three retirement systems, the largest of which is the Wisconsin Retirement System. There are two other pension plans, public pension plans, the City of Milwaukee and the County of Milwaukee. But by far, the vast majority of public employees are covered by the Wisconsin Retirement System.
Okay. Now let's talk about the numbers. Were you surprised at the 9,933 and double the number that asked for the information?
We were surprised by the very rapid growth in retirements, which really took place between December of 2010 and in June of 2011. But we really expected large numbers of retirements and have been expecting them for several years now. It's really a demographic issue as much as it is what people would say is a result of the turmoil in Wisconsin. The demographics are really driving this and what will be more future retirements.
We boomers?
Boomers.
Yeah, talk a little
yes,
louder.
Yes,
we boomers?
You boomers. Us boomers.
Us boomers.
I'm a boomer as well. Really, if you looked at the demographics, and here's a number that's very startling. In the United States, starting January 1 of this year, 2011, 7,000 plus baby boomers a day turn 65. And they will turn 65 in that number, 7,000 plus, every day for the next 19 years. So it's a massive graying of the population.
Did you say 19 years?
19 years. That's the baby boom generation, 1946 to 64. And so it's basically a graying of the population. Wisconsin is pretty much a microcosm of the whole country in terms of its demographics. So that's one major reason. We have a large baby boom population that our state employees and local government employees. Second reason is when the recession began around late 2007, 2008, a lot of people just essentially hunkered down and stopped their plans to retire because they didn't know what to expect, as many people do. They wait and see just how long it's going to last and what the severity of a recession is. So what you really had was a tailing off of retirement activity that would normally have flowed through. So now that there appears to be signs we're coming out of recession, a number of people who are 2 years older now are essentially saying, no, I'm going to retire. And of course, the third reason is, and maybe this is a smaller reason, but still an important reason, is that all the turmoil of the last 6 months has given people, I guess, an impetus to look at their situation and decide to retire now.
Well, there was not only a lot of turmoil, but there is a new mandate that public employees pay more for their pensions
yes.
and health care.
Yes.
And those are really very real dollars that will come out of their salaries.
Yes.
Well, any estimate in terms of the 9,933, how much was a function of baby boomers just retiring and the, quote, turmoil factor, close quote?
We really don't have that number.
Okay.
We don't ask our members why they're retiring. What we try to do is help them make the best decisions that we can and that are good for them on their retirement benefit.
And in light of the chaos in Washington, you know, the default debt and all that, and the stock market, that
right.
We should say that all the studies have shown that Wisconsin has one of the best funded pension systems, correct?
Correct.
Now, I know those assets are managed by the investment board. That's
right.
Not you.
Right.
But generally, there's going to be money to pay these pensions.
Right. The WRS is a pre-funded system. In other words, the money has been accumulated over many years and has been reserved to pay for the pension benefits of our members when they retire. Pre-funding. It's a defined benefit plan. And the asset levels now, $80+ billion, have been accumulated for the purpose of paying retirement. We knew this was coming, and it's been planned to meet that demand.
Okay. Well, let's roll up our sleeves. Let's look at our first numbers here. The thank you very much. Your agency provided a list of who actually did retire for the last 3 years. So we see at the bottom of the first column the 9933 that I alluded to. And let's look at the single biggest category there, school districts. Can you tell me about these numbers in terms of the biggest category, Dave, school districts, teachers, administrators?
Sure.
What happened there?
Teachers comprise about 38% of all the members of the system, and the active members' membership is about 265,000. So teachers comprise about 38% of that, and other school district employees comprise about 10%. So you're looking at almost school district employees, including teachers, comprising over 45, almost 50% of the active members of the system.
95% more teachers retired
right.
in the first 6 months of 11 than 10.
Yes.
Without getting into the merits or demerits of the collective bargaining changes, mm-hmm. do you think that was a big driver for the 95% increase, sir?
There's probably some reason that was a part of the reason that teachers were leaving, because the way the law was structured, the collective bargaining agreements that were not in place essentially going to be affected by the law, and those that were in place would essentially expire at the end of that collective bargaining agreement. There are other benefits that school districts provide in those collective bargaining agreements, for example, health insurance.
Mm-hmm.
And so if a collective bargaining agreement had an arrangement whereby a teacher would have health insurance for 2 years after they retire or till they're Medicare eligible, many were worried that they would lose that benefit in a new, in the post collective bargaining, non-collective bargaining atmosphere, and of course schools are pinched very
yes.
much. There's $800 million reduction in school funding. So I think many teachers may have decided that they didn't want to take a risk, and so you see a large number of teachers leaving.
The large number of teachers retiring, in some cases, this opened up classroom jobs for some younger teachers that were less paid. So in every district, this played out differently, correct?
Correct. It really depends on how many teaching positions a school district is going to decide to fill.
Yes.
Obviously, it generated potential savings. And the question really is, who are they able to hire again? At what salaries? How many of those vacant positions did they fill? And are they holding positions open for savings purposes?
Well, let's go back to the chart and let's just look at the categories of employers that had retirees that exceeded 1,000.
Mm-hmm.
State agencies, 1,966. Now, I think you were cautioning me that because state employees only make up what percent of the WRS active?
About 27% of the total population.
Okay, so this increase of this almost doubling is
right.
not horribly significant because.
It's significant, but not as a percentage of the total population. It's I think has to be kept in perspective.
Okay.
If you took all of the numbers in the column, obviously the 9933, and you said what percentage of that 9933 do local government employees represent? It's 70%.
I see.
And then university and state employees would represent about 30%.
Okay.
Of that. So
And then the third biggest category, University of Wisconsin, this is system-wide, correct, sir?
Correct.
Okay. 1,091, that is an increase of, that's more than doubling.
Right.
Any specific reason for more than doubling a number of retirees in UW system?
Well, if you just look to the 2009 year, for example, there were 571 retirements. It dropped to 480 retirements in 2010 and then went back up. Part of the reasons I talked to you about earlier about why people are retiring now, one of them being there was a delay in retirements. You know, if you'd look back a little further in these numbers, there would be variation up and down in those numbers. But clearly, I think the demographics are part of this. Mm-hmm. I think the certainly the people looking and seeing how much they were going to pay versus what they were going to get in retirement was a factor, and then also I think just the graying of the population was a reason for this as well.
Now, I've talked to some state employees who said that none of the changes that were just enacted this year touch the unused sick leave
Correct.
Conversion factor.
Correct.
Who's entitled to that? All state employees?
State employees and university employees are eligible for what we call the accumulated sick leave conversion credit program. That it means unused sick leave that's accrued during your working career is converted. It's in hours. It's converted to pay. It's a lump sum, and then it's used to pay your health insurance until it's exhausted.
Okay.
The average sick leave balance right now is about 2 years.
Two years.
It's not a huge number. So obviously, some people have more than others, depending on what their utilization was during their career. And certainly your pay levels affect the amount. But there were rumors about sick leave all the way back to December of this year.
Yes. That it would be limited or
capped. That would be limited or capped, or that it would be eliminated. I know there was a lot of concern on the part of members, but there simply wasn't any truth to those rumors.
Okay.
Obviously, we found out that they were simply rumors.
Yes. Okay. Let me ask you, as we take a final look at the first summary numbers, anything significant in the category city, county, towns, villages, tech colleges, anything there you want to point on?
I think what you're seeing is pretty much across the board. There were higher retirements in 2011, the first half of 2011, than in 2010. Mm. So, and certainly higher than in 2009. I think it's true almost across the board. Some more significantly than others, but this has been a record year for us.
Okay.
And in fact, if you extended the experience out through the end of July, I believe we're approaching 13,000.
Oh, wow, 13,000.
Yeah, retirements.
Oh, my. You know, another number, these are very fresh numbers, so I'm really grateful to you and your staff for forwarding them. There's amid the debate of public employees and their benefits and whether they're too generous, mm-hmm. and now they're paying more for pensions mm-hmm. and health care. One of the numbers that I found interesting now, the average annuitant in WRS last year, 2010, got how much, sir?
$23,800 was the average benefit.
Do you think in all the debate and discussion there's a perception that it's much higher than that?
Oh, certainly. That certainly is. I think nationally there's sort of a drumbeat that the media has picked up and said, oh, public employees, they have these rich retirement benefits. But if you looked across the country, I think the average benefit is slightly over $20,000. That's the average benefit.
Okay.
Now, there are a lot of people with less than that,
mm-hmm.
and there are.
Let's talk about that. Let's break it down.
Yes.
Thank you for the information.
Sure.
Thank you and the agency for the information. Well, starting out, those who receive WRS pensions in Wisconsin who get less than $10,000, one in four.
Yes.
26%.
Yes.
That number surprised me.
Yes, and what you have to remember is that there, in those numbers, are workers who are fairly have fairly modest salaries, and workers who are part time.
Mm-hmm.
We'll get into this a little bit later. The legislature changed the number of hours to qualify for a pension, but prior to July 1, it was 600 hours a year with an expected duration of a year.
Mm-hmm.
Then you would be included in the system. So there are a lot of, bus drivers. There are a lot of, part-time employees in other capacities that are covered, and they tend to have the lower annuity.
Okay, let's look at the second category. Almost one in three of those who got a pension, again, this is for calendar 2010, received between $10,000 and $25,000.
Yes.
Dave?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
And then one in four received pensions of between $25,000 and $40,000.
Mm-hmm.
So in sum, 83% of the 160,000 who retired public employees mm-hmm. who got pensions last year got less than, and let's all be sure, less than
$40,000. $40,000, correct.
Correct?
Correct. It's, sometimes the focus is on the high earners, the high.
Well, we'll talk
yes.
about them in a minute. Go ahead.
But unfortunately, when the focus is distorted like that, and you don't really look at the pie charts and the numbers, but you simply hear these things, that you translate them to everyone, and it's not true. It's just a complete falsehood that there's this lucrative pension plan. It's true across the country, not just in Wisconsin.
Well, but still, let's land on the
yes.
390 people who are at the other end of the pension continuum,
mm-hmm.
Especially the 60
right.
Getting pensions from through WRS of more than $150,000 a year. Would these be some of our high-paid retired former UW-Madison faculty? Who are these people? Now, I know this is private, but
right.
generally, who are
generally speaking, these might be individuals from the university who are in highly paid positions, in either administration or faculty that were deans, or they're very highly paid individuals. In many cases, and again, here's a problem with numbers. If you don't look behind them, you don't see what the reality is. Let's take the 60 people,
yes.
Which constitutes far less than 1% of the population. I mean, it's hundreds of a percent, that make more than 150,000. Many of those individuals are people who did not take their pensions until they were in their late 70s, and in some cases up to 80 years old.
Okay.
And the reason that's significant is that many of those individuals retired under what's called the money purchase method. In other words, the value of their accounts determined what their monthly pension was.
Mm-hmm.
Well, under the IRS code, you have to pay that out over their life expectancy.
Oh, which is
which is much shorter, correct. So if they have a high account balance through years and years of compounding of contributions and interest, we're then forced to pay it out over a very short period of time. Your life expectancy at, let's say, 78 might only be 7 years.
Mm-hmm.
So while they might be getting very high pensions, they may not collect them for very long because of
Do you have to pay it in that case only over 7 years, life expectancy?
No. If they live beyond that, we pay for their lifetime.
Yes.
But we have to use the IRS tables and make sure we're in compliance with the IRS because we are a qualified pension plan, meaning there's a tax status that we have. So many of them live beyond the age 80, 85 or 87, but many of them don't. So it's a little bit of a misnomer to say that they're drawing these huge pensions and there's not some circumstance behind it that explain it.
Well, I think I overlooked a number here. The average age that someone goes from active to retired in WRS
mm-hmm.
is 60.6 years.
Correct.
And what's the average number of years that they would draw this annuity?
Right now, the average life expectancy of a male is 83. Average life expectancy for a female is about 86. So it's the difference, you know, whatever it is, 22 years on average. And so that's what you would think of as the average lifespan. Averages are a little deceiving too. Mm-hmm. Obviously, many people live longer than that, or many people live shorter than that number. But that's the average.
Well, and in terms of how much someone would get in a pension, one of the things that determines that is whether they sign up for the joint annuity.
Yes, the joint survivor.
How does that work? Whether it just goes to them for their lifetime,
correct,
or whether they're surviving spouse.
Correct. You can have a joint survivor, which means that if you have a spouse, for example, that your pension can, if you die prior to your spouse, that pension can be paid to your spouse for his or her lifetime. And the benefit is actually reduced. Mm-hmm. It's like buying life insurance in a way. Mm-hmm. So I'll just use a simple example. If your monthly benefit was $100 and you were going to provide a benefit for your spouse for his or her lifetime, your benefit would be reduced by $15, 15% to pay for that joint life annuity. So you're paying essentially life insurance at that point.
This is very interesting. One of the things that has developed lately that I've heard is criticism of the idea that some people retire and then come back to work. So I asked ETF, and thank you for coming up with this.
Sure.
There's a category called rehired annuitants.
Correct.
So let's go to that number. And in 2009, the number of rehired annuitants, 557. That's grown to 541. And then, is this also a record number, the 670 in the first 6 months of this year?
It's hard to tell. It's
7 months,
hard to tell. It is a higher number, just because as a cohort of those retiring, the more people retiring, the more people you're going to maybe find who work their way back to employment with a employer covered under the WRS. And so I would say that you really have to look at these numbers in relation to the number of people that retired.
Mm-hmm.
and really ask yourself, as a percentage, is it higher or lower?
Well, one of the things we have to keep in perspective, the rehired annuitants, 670 of 9933, so mm-hmm. it's a small number.
Right.
But still, you have probably heard, I've heard the criticism of people, well, they cash out, they're off the job, and mm-hmm. then they come back at the same pay,
sure,
1 month later.
Sure.
How does this work? Who asked them to come back?
All right. Usually, it's the employer. First of all, under the federal tax code, you have to have a bona fide termination. In other words, there has to be a break in service. In the WRS, it's at least 30 days break in service. They have to be off the payroll. They have to stop all benefits from the employer. There cannot be an agreement to return. Either verbally or in writing, that's enforceable.
There cannot be. Why?
Because it's not a bona fide termination if you have agreed to come back.
Sure.
So there are very specific rules that are required. Now, remember, the 670 may not be the people that retired this year.
Oh.
They may have retired in 2000 earlier.
Eight, nine.
Yeah, you don't 10. Know. We just know that. We receive a form back from the employer that says we've rehired this retiree. So they may have been from a prior year.
That's
or
a
years.
Good point.
They may have been retired for a year before they come back. It's just it's just based on the individual situation.
Do you think the UW-Madison is the biggest one to use this?
It's hard to say, but we think, for example, substitute teachers are a large portion of that. Substitute teachers for K-12.
Okay.
Certainly, UW-Madison has rehired annuitants, but the bulk of those probably are substitute teachers who say, "Well, you know, I'm retired, but I'm available as a substitute teacher when needed." And so that's I think an explanation.
Well, just to clarify, public employees who are now paying 5.8% towards their
mm-hmm.
pension, is that 5.8% going to go up, sir? And if so,
it adjusts every year. We do an actuarial value, what's called a valuation, every year, and the actuary recommends whether contribution rates should increase or decrease. We did that valuation in June, and the actuary recommended that the increase go from 5.8% to 5.9% for both the employees and the employer.
Could or will? I mean, is there some wiggle room, or definitely will go up?
It will go up.
It will
We've
go
already
up.
Set those rates.
Starting when?
Starting in January 1 of 2012.
Okay. There were some changes in the WRS system that were approved.
Yes.
As part of the budget, I believe.
Yes.
What are the big two or three, sir?
Okay. Well, there's actually two laws that that were involved. One is Act 10. As you recall, that was the act
budget
that was
repair
enjoined,
bill.
Budget repair bill that was enjoined, and then finally had the approval of the Supreme Court. And
yep.
then Act 32, which was the biennial budget bill.
Yep.
So let's turn to Act 10 first, which was the budget repair bill, and that was where you had a lot of the concern. That was the change in the law that required employees to pay half of the total contribution rate, and they could not have the employer pay it. The employer, essentially, in that law, could not pay it on behalf of
And that
the
was all public employees?
That was all public employees. Now, obviously...
And the number of public employees is approximately?
Well, there are 265,000 active employees.
In the WRS system?
In the WRS.
Not including those other two
not
systems?
Not including the other two.
Okay, excuse
Although there's
me.
Still a question in Milwaukee County and the city of Milwaukee whether the law applies to them, and I don't know if you've read that. About
no,
that
I'm not
legal
up on
issue.
That. I better not go there. I'd
yes,
be dangerous,
right.
Even more dangerous.
So that was the first change, and the second change was a change in the benefit level for executive and elected officials.
Mm-hmm.
State executives and elected officials around the state, whether they be senators or assemblymen or mayors or others who are elected officials and participating in the Wisconsin retirement system, prior to July 1 had a formula for determining their benefit, their defined benefit of 2% for each year of service,
mm-hmm.
times their average of their three high years of earnings. The law changed that and reduced it to 1.6% for each year of service. Now, that's the same, that 1.6% is the same as all other general employees in the system have. So they essentially brought them down to the same level as all other employees who are general employees in the system.
Okay.
It's a staggered start to that because there were some concerns about whether there was a violation of constitutional provisions in the state constitution. So, for example, for elected officials, it does not start until their new term
their
of
new
office.
Their new terms. That's when it takes them back from 2% to 1.6.
Correct.
Okay. Excuse me.
So that's the second provision. The third provision in Act 10 was an increase in employee health insurance premiums. The law now says that the employer cannot pay more than 88%. Of the employee's health premium.
Yep.
And so that was an immediate increase in health insurance costs for employees, and that will start, I believe, in the last paycheck of August,
mm-hmm.
For state employees. And then finally, there were some changes in health benefits for state employees. There was a mandatory 5% savings in the health insurance coverage for the plans that cover state employees, and that 5% was to be achieved through changes in copayments,
yep. additional copayments,
or other coverage changes.
Yep.
The Group Insurance Board in June decided that they would essentially provide a co-insurance cost for employees that's 90-10. So the employees are going to be paying 10% of their normal medical and illness coverage, up to a maximum of $500 for a single policy and $1,000 for a family policy.
Then in the budget bill, didn't we have a couple changes
yes.
on who's eligible for pensions?
Yes.
Dealing with part-time?
Yes.
Can you give
us
a quick summary of those?
two provisions. One is a vesting period of 5 years. You have to have 5 years of credible service in order to receive a benefit from the WRS. Mm-hmm. If you don't have 5 years of service, all you receive is your contributions and the interest that's accrued on those contributions.
Yes.
It's a pretty standard kind of vesting period for pension plans, both public and private. The second was a change in the initial eligibility requirements for new members entering the WRS. Prior to July 1, as I said, it was 600 hours in a year expected duration of employment. It is now 1,200 hours, or two-thirds of what is considered full-time, 1,200 hours.
They doubled
in a
it.
Year. Yes.
From 600 to 1,200 to be eligible for WRS benefits.
Coverage, yes.
Does that have the effect of part-time employees no longer being eligible for WRS?
For new employees, it would have the effect of someone who works 1,040 hours, for example, in a year, would not be eligible.
Would not be eligible. Is this the biggest change in our WRS system?
Well, I wouldn't say it's the biggest change, but it certainly is an important change. We know now, for example, that there are more than 17,000 members of the system that work between 600 hours and 1,200 hours. So, in theory, you would have a much smaller, starting July 1, you would have a much smaller number of employees coming into coverage, particularly if they were worked 1,200 hours.
How is the word of this change going to get out to this potential?
We have made a lot of effort over the last number of months, even before Act 10 was enacted. We started notifying our members through a variety of means, our website, through speeches that we gave, our presentations that were done to our members. Our call center has been distributing this information for those that are calling in and asking questions. So we've made a concerted effort to get out there and working also with employers and mm-hmm. giving that information to employers so they could get that information to their employees.
Well, we're almost out of time, so maybe a final question. As we look out 2 and 3 years, what are going to be some of the biggest issues that you and the WRS are going to be wrestling with, sir?
Well, we are still going to see a pretty large number of retirements, perhaps even larger than what we're seeing now, just by the graying.
Boomers.
The graying of the population.
Less,
waiting yet to be determined is the number of people who look at, after they're paying their contribution for health insurance and for retirement, they'll look at their net check and say, what is my retirement benefit versus what is my paycheck, and make a decision. It may be that they will determine they're better off actually retiring. And working part-time somewhere rather than...
So
there's a lot of decision-making that will be going on there. I think the other issues and the challenges for us is simply trying to implement these things. They're not easy to implement. They'll be costly, and there'll be a lot of effort on our part.
Well, you've been in the middle of the biggest change in WRS in decades, or potentially ever, correct?
Yes. And let me, I think, close by saying there is one concern I have about that. The legislature, when these two provisions were passed, did not actually study the actuarial effect of these changes.
You just passed them.
They just passed them.
Without that study?
Without the study, the required study in the law. I'm hoping that they do, in fact, at some point, actually do a study to see what the impact on the system is, because this is a large system. It's highly complex, and you would not want some unintended consequences to occur that you really didn't expect to have happen that would harm the system.
That's the one that keeps you up nights?
Yes.
I understand. ETF Secretary Dave Stella, thanks so much.
Thank you.
There's been so many changes, and thanks for all the numbers and walking us through them.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you.